Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Now, coming up on the show, we will be talking with Simon Dixon of Bank to the Future. But first, oh my gosh, what's happening in crypto and Bitcoin? Is it Bitcoin winter, or is this just going to be a little sideways action as we build up toward the next big bull run? Stacy.
I think it's going to be quite a few months, perhaps at least a year, before we resume the bull, perhaps. But we are down in Cancun. We're at Satoshi Roundtable, and I'm optimistic that a lot is being built. So that's the most important thing. And we, of course, always see this during the bear markets. Things really, the builders are the only people who stay around. The builders continue to build. The speculators leave. Exit the building. So we have the builders left, and it makes you feel good if you're hanging around.
Well, it's good that there are builders left, you know. I think a lot of people, when the price was down in the last year or so, they were worried that the whole space would just evaporate and nobody would ever come back. But in fact, there's a core group of builders and a core group of believers. And so their faith has not been shaken. And meanwhile, in the banking sector, banks continue to do what they do best, and that is bad stuff. And it looks like their balance sheets are collapsing and the shenanigans keep rising. So Bitcoin will have its day against the banks coming up sooner than a lot of people think, I think. Stacy.
Yeah. And I also saw a New York Times headline saying, oh my God, guess what? We figured out that Iran can get around these sanctions by using Bitcoin. So we have a lot of stuff going on at the same time. And it's time now to turn to Simon Dixon of BankToTheFuture.com, because you've got your fingers in all the pies as a platform whereby people can come and invest in the equity of startups in the crypto space. You encounter many builders. But on the other side, you also encounter the problem with the price and speculators kind of disappearing. What is your assessment right now of the overall situation of where we are in this bear market?
So we're in what I call a healthy shakeout, where we take out the people that were never really believing, that are here temporarily. We're getting rid of a lot of the fraud and crap and rubbish that was really in our industry for the last year or so. And we're seeing the big headlines of the people that were really, like, you know, doing the wrong thing and not here for the right reasons. And so, but that also brings the exciting opportunity where we see the people that have got a real products and here to do stuff and make a difference in the future of finance.
Right. So let's talk about what the big difference in the future of finance might be. So now we've had 10 years with Bitcoin. We know that it's a way for people to buy stuff. We know that it's a way for people to store their value as a store of value. We also know that it can do many different things as a protocol that one would say is a big challenge to the establishment. And of course, one of those topics would be, let me ask you about two specific things, Simon Dixon. One would be what are called security tokens. That is the tokens or crypto that acts like securities, because you have a big background in securities. And another big trend, and maybe you can enlighten our audience about this, are stable coins. Like, what are these stable coins? Why do we have stable coins? What do they do? But let's start with securities, or what they call initial security offerings. Simon.
Yeah, so if you look back at the history of crypto, you know, a bunch of people believed in Bitcoin, it paid off and went really well for them. Then we saw this wave of people trying to create alternatives. And we had this thing called Ethereum, which is where people were creating these things called smart contracts. And these things called smart contracts turns out to be ways to do illegal unregistered securities offerings. And so that's kind of the cycle of where, but you had waves where people got very wealthy and wanted to reinvest their wealth. So lots of early Bitcoiners wanted to reinvest their wealth. Lots of people that got wealthy in Ethereum wanted to reinvest their wealth. And lots of people that got invested in these token offerings wanted to reinvest their wealth. Now there's a bit of a shakeout, and the industry is learning that all these new young people that thought that doing a securities offering was just technology are learning that there's a thing called securities laws and they need to comply with them in order to do this. So the industry is shaken out, and that's a new wave of taking some of the laws that one needs to comply to for consumer protections and everything else, and baking it into the technology so that people can actually comply and raise finance on a global scale using these tokens, but in compliance with international securities laws.
Max mentioned banks, but there are some big investment banks like Fidelity Bank is about to offer some services in the Bitcoin space. We have Bakkt, which is big player. Are they the CBOE or the NASDAQ?
ICE, isn't it? ICE.
ICE. Okay. So they're big players and, legit sort of players in the space. How do you feel the market will change in your arena based on these sort of establishment players entering the market?
Yeah, so, well, the market's kind of dividing in two, and the markets, the new people that enter this space, it's a minefield when, our industry has just been serving them and trying to onboard them, because amongst all these builders, there's a bunch of scammers and illegitimate people that really want to steal your money and haven't got your right intentions. And so, that comes with the movement of democratizing finance comes all these scammers as well. At the same time, you've got the traditional financial players that are now really recognizing Bitcoin as the only thing that they can kind of work with. They're looking at the alternatives and saying, well, it took us this long to get into Bitcoin and grow enough trust to build products around Bitcoin. We can't really look at any of the other stuff yet, because we're still trying to figure out how do we store people's money with Bitcoin. And so it's creating this counter movement, as it were, where people are using Bitcoin as it was intended to be, where they can own their own money, they can spend their own money, and they can benefit from the economics of Bitcoin. But at the same time, the financial institutions are looking at ways in which they can store people's money, recreate the banking system, but using Bitcoin around that. And these both have different uses. If you're trying to take some of your fiat and you're trying to get into Bitcoin for the first time, you might want to use one of these more trusted financial institutions, but eventually you'll learn the benefits of owning your own money, spending your own money, and you can gradually onboard into Bitcoin the way it was originally designed to be.
Yeah, it's interesting that countries that are concerned about their population using Bitcoin, they've been trying to ban it, and more countries are coming to the conclusion that they can't ban it. As was alluded to earlier, I think in Iran, they're saying, look, we cannot stop it. And this is something that the cypherpunks in the Bitcoin community have known all along, that you really can't stop it. There's no way to stop the protocol. So from your international perspective, I guess the question is, what countries do you think this will have the most profound impact on first? Obviously, in Venezuela, this is the first major meltdown of an economy with the crypto presence. People are using Bitcoin, using crypto. So it's a real part of the global finance now in a real use case of a country melting down. So can you kind of comment on that and how you see that developing in the next couple of years? Kind of a geopolitical view of things, Simon.
Yeah, so Bitcoin is an exit from the traditional financial system. The problem is it's not quite a store of value yet. It's what I call a speculative store of value. And by speculative store of value, I mean gold is currently a store of value. If you want to preserve your wealth, you use gold. But Bitcoin has all the potential, and it looks like becoming a much better store of value than gold, but it's not there yet. And so there's a speculative opportunity whereby if more and more people are buying it, believing that it could become a store of value, then that creates a tremendous opportunity for growth. And it's more speculative investment base. And then as the market evolves and changes, the price crashes because, people have beliefs of whether it's going to make it or not. So the opportunity is, while it's a speculative store of value, and eventually it can become that store of value where it's a more stable unit of account and median of exchange.
But I guess the question, though, is that faith in these institutions that keep these countries together, the banks, the central banks, the governments, it's being challenged by this upstart called Bitcoin. And so this is going to have real world impact. And the other side of the Venezuela crisis could be a population that begins to understand that they have self-sovereignty, which is an idea that people float around in the Bitcoin community. Do you believe that Bitcoin offers self-sovereignty? And if you do, what does that mean?
It does, and it gives people the ability to own their own money, to spend their own money without censorship, and to have a monetary policy that's independent of any of your government shenanigans or the bank shenanigans or any government policy. And so Bitcoin has really simple economics, and there's a fixed supply, and people know the emission rate and how it comes into being. And so it creates a monetary policy that's independent of the traditional financial system, which gives them options. And so if people don't like the way that their government is actually managing their monetary policy, then they have another option, which is the Bitcoin monetary policy.
Of course, Bitcoin has died at least 300 times, and of course, it is again being declared dead. The halving is coming up in the next 12 to 18 months, right? So usually that's about the beginning, a few months before begins the next bull market. Do you expect that, or are you planning on that? Do you think it could, because it's happened and everybody's expecting it, might it not happen again this time?
Maybe. I mean, so you look at the history of the charts of Bitcoin, and you can see, you know, bear markets that we've seen just like this. One of the things that I'm predicting will happen is that each bear market gets slightly longer than the last one. And in that time, it shakes out more people and you get more products, you get more technology being built. One of the challenges with a lot of the companies that we'd invested in during the bull market was that they couldn't handle the customer service. They were scrambling to adjust as the whole world was trying to onboard into Bitcoin. And, you know, customers were just waiting weeks and weeks and weeks for that. So during a bear market, it's a time to, you know, for the companies to reevaluate, help people get into this industry. And I'd expect the bear market to last a little bit longer this time. And I think a longer bear market drives for a stronger bull market.
Of course, this is the longest bear market in Bitcoin history. It passed 411 days over the weekend. So we're at like 413, 414 when this is airing. And so what sort of stuff do you see being built at the moment? What are you looking at as an investor?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's really interesting to see what happens, because it looks like the economy is going to go into a recession, and we're going to learn if Bitcoin is counter to that. But some of the stuff that's being built right now is all around scaling solutions, how to make Bitcoin ready to have, you know, hundreds of millions of people using it, doing, you know, many more magnitude of transactions. And all that technology that was, you know, it's been built over the years, and it's just starting to get to that point now where this is coming into play. We still got a long way to go. User experience is still not good enough for general people to use this. And as we've implemented these scaling solutions, we've still got to get user-friendly ways of people managing their own money, being able to pass it on just to basic things like inheritance. And these are different user cases that entrepreneurs are working on. And just the ability for people to, you know, with self-sovereignty of your own financial future comes the responsibility of storing it and how you manage that. And entrepreneurs are great in building great solutions. And then at the protocol level, you know, scalability, so that when the bull market comes around, we're ready to onboard all these new people and transact so much greater than we have.
Right. So, you know, for the last few years, different countries have popped up and saying, oh, we want to be the crypto, Switzerland of crypto. And Hong Kong was big, and different countries are big, and Isle of Man was big, and Wyoming, the state of Wyoming in the United States, is now making a play to be the go-to destination for crypto corporations. And it's pretty dynamic. It changes pretty often, this whole idea of what the best destination is. You're a global presence with Bank to the Future. What's the trend there? Are there a couple of countries or territories that are emerging now as the go-to places?
I think Malta's the furthest ahead at this stage at the moment in changing laws and attracting startups, finding regulators that want to embrace new different ways of doing things, and banks that are willing to support and onboard these companies. And so Malta seems to be ahead in that game, but this changes really quickly. In 3 months to 6 months, the whole environment can change. I know Switzerland wants to do things, and it just constantly changes. The fact of the matter is that these smaller jurisdictions see an opportunity in attracting all the jobs and all the opportunity and becoming the next Wall Street using these different financial products and competing with some of the more established financial players. And all around the globe, those opportunities are being sought by governments.
Of course, Max. Jack Dorsey of Twitter said basically it will be the jurisdiction of the internet. It is internet money. So maybe we don't need the nation state anymore.
I trust Jack. Or the next crypto Switzerland could be Switzerland. Either way, looks like Bitcoin is on an unstoppable march toward global domination. Ha, 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 all you banksters. Anyway, that's going to do it for this edition of Double Down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Until next time, bye, y'all.